I'm Angela Kelly Robeck, host of the Empowered Principal Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Teachers are at the beginning of most of my decisions. I do that through a simple question asking, whenever something new comes down the pike, as far as initiatives or anything like that.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. This is where educators can come to find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can truly make an impact in your organization. I chat with amazing guests who epitomize what it truly means to be a leader of learning. I'm so glad you've tuned in. Let's get started. Hey, Leader of Learning, welcome to episode 131. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really happy you're here. But before we go any further, I want to ask you a question. If you're listening to this and you're a teacher, do you truly feel like you are at the center of the decisions that your school leaders and administrators make? Or if you're an administrator or other school leader, do you truly put teachers at the center of the decisions you make? I know it's really easy for us to always think about what's in the best interest of the students, but my guest in this episode, Dr. Chris Jones, an award-winning principal from Massachusetts, he is making a name for himself by what he calls a learner-centered or teacher-centered approach to leadership. I was really excited to interview him, and I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this episode. So coming up after these messages is my interview with Dr. Christopher Jones. This episode is sponsored by my favorite recording platform and the one I used for this interview, Riverside.fm. I love Riverside because it's as easy to use as any video conferencing platform such as Zoom, but I can record much higher quality audio and video on their platform. And what's amazing is that it doesn't matter where my guest is located. It still sounds like they're sitting with me in the same room. After recording, you can download separate audio and video tracks or use the Riverside platform to easily edit and even transcribe your content. Their embedded editor will save hours of editing time. You can create a ready-to-publish podcast or video with just a few clicks. And with all new iOS and Android apps, you can invite guests, record, and download high-quality audio and video easily anywhere. You've already got your incredible phone camera, so all you need is the Riverside mobile app. Today, Riverside is used by me and more than 70,000 content creators, ranging from individual creators to big name content creators. There's a reason why so many creators use Riverside. Check them out and all of their amazing features at riverside.fm or click the link in the show notes and create an account. Use the code LOL for Leader of Learning to get $10 off your subscription and get started today. Welcome back, Leader of Learning. It's my honor and privilege to have as a guest in this episode, Dr. Chris Jones. And through the magic of podcasting, you as the listener cannot hear how much technical difficulty we are having tonight. We've started and restarted this recording several times, but that's okay. I'm excited to have Chris here. And if you would, Chris, before we get going, even though it's the first time for the listeners, I've heard it a few times, but if you could again, please introduce yourself, who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And what never gets tired is me saying thank you, Dan, for having me on this podcast. I'm really excited to talk to you. You do a lot of good work, and it's exciting for me. So I'm the proud principal of Whitman-Hanson Regional High School, and that's in the street address is in Whitman, the building's in Hanson because we're a regional district. And for those of you outside of Massachusetts, that's about 40 minutes southeast of Boston. I say proud principal because I absolutely love being a principal. I think it's the toughest job somebody will ever love. Something that is important to know about me is I'm a teacher-centered principal. And sometimes that raises some eyebrows. because people say, you know, you can't say that. You're a principal. You're supposed to be student-centered and pushing everybody towards student-centered. Well, end result, I am student-centered, but I do that through teachers. I believe in supporting, engaging, and empowering teachers as much as possible so that when they come into the building, they are leaning into what they're passionate about. They're happy to be here. They're engaged. They're empowered to take risks and do what they want. And when you get teachers like that in front of students, the students always benefit. So I see them as my big domino to getting the results of students on a larger scale than I was able to when I was a teacher in the classroom.
You know, I feel like we're speaking the same language in a lot of ways. I talk a lot about transformational leadership and how it's all about empowering staff and treating them like they're individuals, but that they're bought into the collective, you know, vision and mission of the organization and tapping into their individual interests and strengths. So I get it when you talk about being a little bit more teacher-centered than people might think of a traditional principal. But if you could explain that a little bit better, you know, you said it raises eyebrows. Like to someone who that term may kind of throw them off a little bit, you know, what specifically would do you do in your day-to-day that would make you someone who really, I guess, focuses on kind of teachers first and everything else after?
Sure. Teachers are at the beginning of most of my decisions. I do that through a simple question asking, whenever something new comes down the pike, as far as initiatives or anything like that, I ask what it looks like for teachers in the classroom, because I think it's really important that leaders remember what it's like to be a teacher in the classroom and not lose that feeling. But you know, I envision it like a circle. So the first part of that circle is support. It's like a flywheel. And when I'm supporting, it's not always that I just say, oh, the teacher's always right no matter what they do. Supporting is about helping the teachers go through a process of continuous improvement. 1% every day, 10% every day if possible, but either way, getting better each day. And I do that through a number of things. I'm constantly in classrooms. So, you know, informal walkthroughs, I give them almost instant feedback via Voxer on things that are going on. And I don't rely or overly rely on the evaluation piece. I believe in coaching instead of evaluating for a number of reasons. But it comes down to when you're looking at support and working with goals and working at getting better, it's about helping that teacher see where they want to be and then backfilling what they need for support to get there. So building that bridge with them so that they can cross that ravine, so to speak, and get to the other side. And once you support a teacher in that fashion, it becomes much easier to engage them, which is that second piece of that flywheel. And you engage by, I love that you said this, the idea of individual teachers with the collective vision, getting them on board with the collective vision. I couldn't have said it better myself. See, as a school and as a leader, I have a collective vision or a vision where we need to be as a school and where I'd like to see us as a school. That vision means absolutely nothing to individual teachers unless they can see part of their personal vision as to why they entered education in that vision. So part of the engagement piece is getting teachers to see where they fit as an individual, that what's important to them, how that fits into the larger vision, because then they buy into the larger vision, they get it, and they move forward working towards that. And I also, that engages them. And I also do a lot of, I'm their loudest cheerleader. I'm on social media, I'm doing different things. So I promote the things that they do to make sure that it's getting out there so they get engaged in that. And then empowerment is that last piece. And the important thing about empowerment is once you get the teacher engaged and you move into that empowerment piece, it's letting go a little bit. It's letting go of your control a little bit and giving it over to them. Now, the difficult part of that is if you empower somebody and you do it to a point where they're going to stretch, they're going to fall down a little bit. Hopefully it's not a train wreck, but they're going to fall down. The trick being is that once they fall down, that's where you enter into that reflection phase. You don't redo or step in and do again what they've tried to do and maybe not done the way you did. You accept for what it is. make any little adjustments to it. You have to. But the important piece here is moving right back into that support piece of that flywheel. The idea is to get that flywheel spinning as fast as you can, because once you get to empower, if you empower a teacher, they're bought in, right? You supported them, they're engaged, they take that step forward that they might not quite be used to, and then they fall down and you don't support them. Well, they're never gonna step up again. You've got a ton of work now to do with that teacher to get them back to where they are. But if you do support them, they automatically stay engaged, and you start to speed up the rotations of that flywheel until it becomes constant motion. And before you know it, you've got teachers that are passionate. They're happy to be there. They see where they fit, and they're taking initiative to do things.
You know, I love a lot of what you said. I'm going to go back a few minutes. A couple of things that stood out to me that I really appreciated were when you mentioned, first and foremost, involving your teachers in the collective mission, especially when you mentioned that you're in classrooms constantly. I picked up on the fact that you said providing instant feedback or pretty quick feedback to the teachers using Voxer. I mean, Voxer is an app that I've used for several years now for, you know, professional networking and professional learning from educators all over the world, really. And so I truly know how powerful that app can be, whether it's connecting globally or whether it's just through leaving feedback. As an instructional coach, I tried. It didn't, I'm not at the school anymore, but a couple years ago, I was using Microsoft Teams in a very similar way, where I would leave some audio feedback for the teachers, and it started to gain some momentum. But then I took a different position, and there went that experiment. But I really like doing that. Now, one thing that you said about being that kind of teacher-centered leader kind of conjured up this thought in my mind, and I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, does it ever bother people to a point where they feel like maybe lines are being blurred, or you should have someone's back before, like, do people ever feel like you aren't necessarily supporting them because you're supporting someone else first? Or, you know, does it make it difficult? Or actually, I guess, does it make it easier?
I think sometimes, that's a great question, because it's not about, and if I'm reading the question right or hearing you right, it's not about blurred lines between whether I'm supporting students and teachers, but blurred lines between whether I'm supporting the science teacher versus the English teacher. I think it makes it easier, because as I'm moving forward, and sometimes this isn't always an easy thing, because sometimes teachers look at me as always wanting to continuously improve, and that can be a little much sometimes. So I have to be very conscious of that. But I work to make sure that I'm addressing different things with different teachers, so it doesn't look the same for every teacher. It might be able to look the same for a department or these four teachers over here that happen to teach different subjects, but it'll look different for other teachers. So the only time it becomes difficult where it might be blurred lines like that is when I'm not clear on my belief system and my vision. I'm very much about making sure we're taking care of the whole student. That's academics. And I think it has to do with my background, but that's academics. That's social emotional. So it's not like I'm foregoing the academic importance to make sure the kids are okay socially and emotionally. But if a kid's not emotionally or mentally available to learn, you can pound academics all day you want. It's not going to matter. So I have to be clear about that. And whenever there is an issue that comes up, it's because I haven't been clear enough, or at least that's the way I take it. So I just reiterate my vision. I reiterate what I'm about. And in all my communication, I'm very transparent. I explain to people how I got to where I got on the decision that I'm making. So I think that helps.
You kind of lobbed one up for me, so I'm going to spike it home or send it home. I don't know what the term
go
is.
For it.
You mentioned in there the, you know, really supporting the whole child, which as an ASCD emerging leader, and you know, I'm a big believer in the whole child, just as their mantra and motto is. But you also in that mentioned it might be because of your background. What is it about your background that really gets you to be that invested in not just the academics, but everything around student life?
Well, it has to do with my personal why. And my personal why is to improve the educational experience for everybody involved by being purposeful, acting with integrity, and building character. And that has to do with my high school experience. I did not have a good high school experience. I didn't have a bad high school experience where I was, you know, failing things and getting into trouble or anything like that, but I was completely disengaged. Could I do the work? Sure. Did I want to do the work? I had no reason to. I could have done so much better in high school, but just mentally, I wasn't there. I wasn't a depressed kid. I didn't struggle with things like that, but I just never had any programming in my high school. And some of this is my fault because I could have been more proactive. And some of it is my perception was off, which I mentioned in the book. But I didn't have an experience in high school that engaged me on all levels. I was big into sports. So I came, I did what I needed to do to pass, and I did sports. I can't tell you too many things that I remember like, oh yeah, high school were great years, you know, how people think back and stuff like that. So I think if we get an environment, a culture in school where students can find something for them, no matter what it is, so that they feel comfortable academically, obviously with challenges, they feel accepted for who they are and that they're seen for who they are, and engaged that way. That's where we want to be for education. Because if a kid isn't invested, socially, emotionally, mentally, academically, if you're missing any of those, then the kid starts to tune out and they don't reach the fullest potential that they can.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would agree with you a lot in terms of my own personal experience in high school, except for the fact that while I will admittedly say that I probably played the game of school pretty well. I did well. I was in the top third of my class. I could have been even higher if I really wanted to, but by that time, I found my passion for music, actually. I played some sports growing up, too. But really, by the time I got into high school, I was a fairly accomplished musician. And I just focused a lot on that. And I guess I would want to run with that thought for a second and ask you, I think I know what your opinion is, but I'd love for you to express it. When I think about the whole student or the whole child, I also think about supporting academically their deficiencies, but also really growing what they're skilled in, you know, what they do well. And I still feel like, you know, like you said, we need to get there, get better in education, but that's one of the things I think we need to get better with too.
Absolutely. I'm going to say something that might turn some people off, but there have been some really good things that have been put in our face because of this pandemic that we need to run with. And, you know, we talk about learning from adversity. If we don't learn some things and make some serious changes to education because of this pandemic, then we're really missing out, and we're not walking the walk that we like to talk. The idea of backfilling for students and finding out where they are, we've started to do some really creative things. I just had a parent talking to me tonight where we don't offer a certain world language. Their kid is coming into our high school and has 2 years of this world language under their belt that they're learning, and said, well, what if they want to continue to learn this because they've got 2 years, but you don't offer it? So what do we do? So we're going to find something that kid is passionate about learning that language for whatever reason. I didn't dig into that. We're going to find a way to offer that kid credits for that. If a kid needs to learn some class online so they can go do something else, but still attend during the day, we're going to find a way to do that. It's about becoming creative and disrupting the status quo that we're used to. You know, you mentioned the game of education. Well, education is such that it shouldn't be a game. And we need to focus moving forward on, and especially we have to work with teachers to do this, on what works for students. And that's not going to be the same for all students. Now, granted, there's going to be a vast majority that it is, but some students are going to have to look at things differently because they're interested in different things. And the other things, it's great. Look, it's great if we could always do what we wanted to do that we were interested in, but we can't, right? We need some of those skills. So we need to make sure that we're finding the way to approach filling them with that skill if they're struggling there that works for them. Because clearly, if the same thing that works for other students worked for them, they wouldn't have that deficiency necessarily. So we have to make sure we're thinking outside of the box for them, to use an overused phrase.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that though. And I think like for me in my role as an instructional coach, one of the biggest ways I like to try and do that is because like you said, yeah, it'd be great if we can offer, you know, 100% of the time students are learning about what they want to learn about, but it's not the reality. So what I like to do is to try and mix in as many opportunities for students to at least explain, you know, prove their mastery, explain what they know about subject areas in ways that excite them. You know, my district, my school is very big on technology, and you know, students do have one-to-one devices, Chromebooks, and you know, if there's anything that I can find from, you know, obviously I have a passion for podcasting myself, so if students want to try podcasting or creating videos, you know, I'm kind of sick of PowerPoint and Google Slides presentations at this point. But if kids and teachers really love them, then far be it from me to stop them at this point. You know, anything that gets the student excited about how they show what they know instead of just, you know, your more traditional. And I don't want to use the word project. Like I love when teachers use projects, but not antiquated ones, you know what I mean?
Right. You know, it's interesting that you say that. And there's something about giving the students the opportunity to show you their understanding in any way they see fit. The interesting thing, and the reason I call it interesting, is because quite often, right, if they're not all jazzed up about it, say it has something to do with, I think about health because of a certain story I have in mind, but if they're not all jazzed up about showing their understanding on a topic in health, but the teacher says, you show me your understanding in a way that just ties back to the health curriculum on any one of these major themes, the kid's going to pick the thing they feel most comfortable with, right? The easiest thing for them. And people say, well, they need to stretch themselves. Well, they are stretching themselves in the acquisition of knowledge, because even if it's the easiest way to show it, they're still learning what they need to learn, even though it's comfortable. So, they're still making that leap because they have to put the work in. They're just showing you in a way that they're comfortable with. And boy, when we're comfortable and engaged, don't we have such a better showing than when we're not, right? You get rid of those nerves. You get rid of that, oh, I hate doing this. You get rid of the dreaded sentence, I'm not good at this. And so you relax. And before you know it, your brain is ready to learn. You're available to learn and you move forward.
Yeah. Definitely. No, I couldn't agree more. It's so much of what I do in my day-to-day as well, is trying to work with teachers to get students at least excited a little bit about what they're learning. And if that can't come in terms of the actual acquiring of knowledge, then definitely showing it and proving what they know. There are a couple other questions I wanted to ask you before we wrap up here. And one of them is another term, right? You already talked a little bit about sort of that term of being teacher-centered or learner-centered. I wanted to ask you about see to lead or seeing to lead. That's not only the title of your own podcast, but I think kind of one of your biggest beliefs when it comes to leadership. So if you could explain that a little bit.
Sure. And that is my cute way of doing an acronym for support, engage, and empower. So C, seeing, supporting, engaging, empowering to lead. I made that play on words because I think once you step back and you really look at how you're supporting and purposefully engaging and empowering people, you gain better clarity. You gain better clarity and sight, to stick with that analogy, of where you're going as a leader and where your organization can go. So that's where that title comes from. And it was something I played with when I started doing presentations on this topic. And it's just manifested itself from there.
I love that. Again, you know, it's kind of what we started the conversation with, really, about empowering staff and students alike to, you know, kind of be part of the movement and buy into the organization's vision and mission. So I think it's an easy enough acronym to remember. Not only is it short in terms of just three letters and three words, but powerful words too. So I appreciate that a lot. Now, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I did want to ask, we actually had, not only did we have like three or four attempts at this recording tonight, we had a couple of missed opportunities a week or two ago. You actually just recently got an award. I was wondering if you could explain that a little bit. So congratulations, first of all. And what was the award and what was it for?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I don't take compliments well, so I'm sitting here turning red. And No, I was the Massachusetts School Counselors Association Administrator of the Year. And I was nominated
by
my
counselor center leader as well.
Yeah, I guess. and that my director of counseling at the school is the one who nominated me. And I wish I could remember some of the words that she said when I when they announced me as the winner. But it has to do with supporting your counseling department and putting in innovative programming or structures that help move your counseling or your counseling department's ability to serve students in a better way forward. And so the Counselors Association for Massachusetts has this award every year. They do it with their Counselor of the Year. And I was lucky enough to be nominated and receive that award.
That's excellent. Congratulations again. And then definitely before we go, talk to us a little bit about this book that you've been working on. I know it's not out yet, but it will be fairly soon. If you have a release date or you know, an estimate, let us know about that. But what is the book? What is it about? What can we expect from that?
Sure. I do not have a release date yet. I'm anxiously awaiting for that. It's with the publisher and, you know, they're working on it, but it is all about supporting, engaging, and empowering teachers. So it's full of personal anecdotes, and a lot of ways how I came to think the way I think, but then it's broken into sections. And the first section is about supporting, and it's about, you know, building that bridge to help teachers, improve their craft. And it gives examples of how I do that. And it gives tools that I use to do that. And then what follows with the book is the piece on Engage, and it talks about attaching people's personal mission and vision, or why, if you want, a more popular term as to why they got into education, to the larger collective vision so that you can all move forward. And again, it follows the same thing. It gives a little bit of reflection on that, and then it gives me practices that I use, and then it gives some tools. It gives some examples. You know, I did a whole exercise with my faculty on building stories from their individual whys, because we kept regrouping until we got a collective why by sharing their individual whys. And then we built stories to have a story of who we were, basically, and what we believed. And then it talks about empowering. And it goes through what I do to empower teachers. And again, it gives you tips, tricks, tools, and resources that you can use. And I actually, and I don't think it's a very long part of it, but it's something I'm looking at expanding later. It's called release, because there's a stage from engaging teachers and bringing them along to empowerment. There's that gray area there where you have to release, you have to give away control, and man, sometimes that's hard. It can be scary for, you know, all the reasons that, oh, I'm where the buck stops. But it can also be scary because of that control aspect of it. And that section of release is the highest form of engagement, but the lowest form of empowerment. And so I just touch on that a little bit. But I run you through the book with resources, and it's meant to be an easier read, a practical read. It's not massive research citation stuff. But it's definitely useful from the people that have read the pre-published copy. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on it.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And you know, not just about the support and engage and empower, but you mentioned the release thing, and I feel like it's something that I've been telling people for years about. I always approach it like this. educators are some of the most passionate people that I've ever been around. And because of that, they're so invested in what they do that it's very hard. And I'm talking about classroom teachers through, you know, administrators, like everyone puts so much of themselves in what they do that it's almost natural. Like I understand why people need to feel like they're in so much control. And so it's just naturally difficult to release and give up some of that control. It's hard for classroom teachers. It's definitely hard for administrators, and teachers feel that. And I think they've felt it more so than ever over the last few years during the pandemic, as, you know, more and more kind of policies were in place and things that they needed to abide by and adhere to. So that's what excites me the most, I think, about your work and about looking forward to that book. I know you don't know when it's going to be out, but as we wrap up, how can people get in touch with you? And also, when the book does come out, where can they find it and get more information about it?
Sure. They can find it anywhere where books are sold. That sounds weird to say that. Also, I'll probably be mentioning it on my podcast that has the same name, the Sea to Lead podcast, which one of the things, the interesting things about empowering people, when you empower somebody to talk to them on a podcast, all the different things I hear that help shape my viewpoint about that, because I'm actually hearing the voices of people that are living it. So it's really interesting. But the best way to get in touch with me is probably through Twitter. That's at Dr. Dr. C.S. Jones. So that's at Dr. C.S. Jones. I'm also on Facebook, Dr. C.S. Jones. I'm on Instagram, Dr. C.S. Jones. So I'm all over the place. If you look for Dr. C.S. Jones, you pretty much find me. My blog is drcsjones.blog. So, but reach out. I'd love to hear from people.
Yeah, easy enough. Congratulations again on the award and the book. I know it's not out yet, but looking forward to it when it is. I know your work is basically done. So again, congratulations. Thank you so much for your time here tonight. And you know, good luck the rest of the way this school year.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really happy to be here. So thanks.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. I would also appreciate it if you would leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you use to listen. For more information about me or this show, head over to leaderoflearning.com. While you're there, you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, how to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even find out how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.